So this may sound like I'm dodging the question, but I'm actually trying to be helpful here. The number one takeaway is don't believe all this stuff when you see, oh, gold is down because of X, Y, or Z. They're just making it up. They don't know. It's their guess. So I don't see central bank gold buying as that thing that's going to take gold to 5,000 or 10,000 or wherever it goes before they start lopping zeros off the dollar. I see it rather as a backstop. And I think that's actually really important. And one reason why I'm less fearful talking about a correction after gold put such a hockey stick is this central bank gold buying.
I did have a question. You mentioned the word Trump shock. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's not an accident. And it's not just me being hyperbolic. And by the way, it's not even necessarily anti-Trump. I mean it very specifically in comparison to Nixon shock back in 1971 when Tricky Dick slammed the gold window on Charles de Gaulle's fingers and took the U.S. off any remaining semblance of a gold standard.
Good day, everybody. We are back. Welcome. This is Steve Yang. Today, we are joined by Lobo Tigre, also known as the Independent Speculator. If you're serious about metals, mining, commodities, this is a must-follow voice. Lobo's work is data-driven, independent, and consistently ahead of the curve. And if you're listening, make sure to follow him on X and LinkedIn. He's always dropping gems. Lobo, great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
For those of us who may be newer to your work, I got a question. Who is Louis James?
Well, you know, Lobo Tigre is a sort of colorful name, and we decided, it's a long story, but we decided to use the Louis James name back when I worked at Casey Research, became fairly well known in the space that way. And so when I went independent, I was advised heavily not to just abandon that name that was well known. I was like, yeah, but what about transparency? And, you know, and so we kept it as the brand. The name of the company is Louis James LLC. But I don't have my passport on me, but I could stick it in the camera and show you that my legal name is, in fact, Lobo Tigre. As for the whole long story, best shared over a beverage of your choice some evening.
Well, Lobo, curious how you became the Independent Speculator as well. You've spent time with Rick Rule and Doug Casey. Curious as to who else shaped your thinking and, you know, on markets and risk, if you can just kind of give us a little bit of your background.
All right. So this is one of those things where I certainly did not get my job with Casey Research through experience and in past excellence. I knew Doug. We were friends already. And I guess the qualities that he saw in me were a person who would get the job done. And he figured I was smart enough to learn a thing or two. And if that was his speculation, I think it paid off for him, if I do say so myself. His partner, David Galan, said fish to water. Like I never studied geology in school. I had never invested before, didn't know what a warrant was. I mean, I was a writer and they hired me to help with the editing of Doug's International Speculator, which he was pretty tired of doing every month. So that's how it started. I did learn a lot. that was 2004. And a proud moment in my life was in 2008 when Doug had some money that was restricted to U.S. equities. And he came to me and said, Lobo, what do you think I should do with this money? And I felt like, oh, you know, all those painful lessons, and some of them were painful. The first thing I wrote for Doug, maybe this is too far down this rabbit hole, but it was like the worst, most insulting, scathing review possible was, you know, not red ink all over the place. It was just, didn't even bother. Just wrote at the top, reads like magazine article. That was it. You know, oh, wound me to the quick. You know, we do analysis, we do research. We don't regurgitate, you know, hype from the internet or whatever. So yeah, I figured I had to up my game and really dive in. So I've been happy ever since. I never studied geology, but I collected rocks as a kid. I've always been fascinated in it. And true story, I had just a couple months before Doug and David offered me that job, I had never been serious about money or finance, like I was saying. And I decided, you know, instead of talking about capitalism so much, I should do it. I should get serious about money. When the student was ready, the master appeared. And there you go. So I worked with Doug. Obviously, he and to give credit where due, David Galland, who ran the day-to-day operations, did most of my education as a young speculator. Rick, as you mentioned, was incredibly generous with his time, and he wasn't even paid. I guess just friends of Doug and so on. But I remember one day he sat down and taught me about the oil patch for a whole day. And I don't know what a whole day of Rick Rule's time is worth, but it's certainly more than I could have paid him in cash for sure. Other people in the field, I remember Bob Bishop back in the day, and Brent Cook and some other really smart people who actually, you know, were geologists. You know, I just stand next to them in the field while they're asking the CEOs and the geologists questions about their project. School of Hard Knocks and the School of Hard Rocks, you know, not an easy path, but if anybody wants to learn this, there's nothing like getting out there and doing it.
Lobo, you are, a lot of people learn from you, and you call yourself off camera just the guy, very humble. But I do want to learn from you here. And so, you know, we've got a lot going on. Now, we've seen metals pull back recently. Gold's off, you know, record highs, silver and other metals down. You know, what's driving this sell-off? And is anything holding up better or worse than you expected?
Well, I've got some good news and some bad news for you. And one is not all the metals off. Copper's actually recovering from its post-tariff scare meltdown. I mean, that wasn't a meltdown. That was just jumping off a cliff. And it's almost back up to where it was before that. So it's not all grim. The so-called precious metals space, if you will, is the one that's getting whacked. And, it, you know, it's funny. Every time there's a notable move in gold or silver, we see these, primarily gold, we see these headlines. Oh, gold retreats because of fears of Fed, you know, rate adjustment, or gold retreats because China negotiations going well, or because of peace in the Middle East. You know, dear audience, you should understand, when you see these headlines, these guys are making this shit up, and I could put it less politely. They don't know. Nobody knows. Mr. Market isn't a guy you can call on the phone and say, yo, market dude, what you doing today, bro? Why? It's millions of people interacting through various, you know, explicit structures, right? And price happens, you know, and we can talk about price manipulation later if you want. But the point is, there is no single one reason. A movement is a preponderance of effects of buying and selling, bidding and offering, and so on, where things settle. And big moves often involve, you know, stops triggered, things like that. As to the fundamental why, you know, we have different guesses. So this may sound like I'm dodging the question, but I'm actually trying to be helpful here. The, you know, the number one takeaway is, don't believe all this stuff when you see, oh, gold is down because of X, Y, or Z. They're just making it up. They don't know. It's their guess. That having been said, you know, as a fundamental analyst, nothing has changed in the fundamentals of the story. As you and I are speaking just this morning, there was news out that the Bank of Korea, South Korea, is looking at joining the central bank gold buying club for the first time in over a decade. So the central bank gold buying is a huge thing, and it hasn't gone away. If anything, it's just gotten better, right? So it's not like suddenly that big driver that we've enjoyed over the last couple of years, really since the second invasion of Ukraine, it's not like that's gone into reverse. Nothing else has really changed, not in any material way. The noise of the day does not explain the big moves. So this isn't a proof. I don't know. I don't have Mr. Market on the phone either. But for what it's worth, my answer to your question is, I think at some point Icarus just gets close enough to the sun that he starts worrying about those wax wings. Okay, and you don't know where that is. Could it have been 4,000 even, a nice round number? Maybe. Once it blew through that, it was pretty obvious it wanted to go higher. 4,300, pushing 4,400. That was pretty rich. And I don't think any of these momos with their explanations can tell you why that happened. You know, the technicals were overbought for a long time, so that doesn't help us either. Oh, it was overbought. Well, geez, It was overbought at 4,000. That doesn't explain what happened either. So in my view, it's just at some point, you get enough people who want to start taking some profits, locking in some gains, or just worry this is too far, too fast. Any hockey stick move, the higher that goes, the longer that goes, the greater the odds that it's just going to roll over. You know, famously, uranium did this in triple digits in early 2024. There was no bad news that day. There was no nuclear accident. There was no, you know, major producer announcing some, you know, giant new mine. It had just gone far enough for that. So that's my answer. As nobody really knows. My sense is just it had gone far enough. The good news of that is that if it was, oh, the central banks have flipped from buying to selling, that would be really bad for gold, right? Or if it was, oh, I don't know, peace broke out in the world, not just Gaza, but Ukraine, you know, and nobody needs no safe haven assets anymore, that would be bad, right? Anything like that would be a fundamental shift in the market. But just, oh, it's gone too high and a correction was overdue, that's not a problem, you know. Markets correct at some point. They pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and get going again.
Lobo, you mentioned South Korea and the gold buying club. If you can expound on what that means and how does that affect price of gold and what can we expect moving forward?
Okay, so let me take the last bit first. I don't think the central bank gold buying necessarily drives gold to the moon. I think despite my friend Doug Casey's comments about central bankers' intelligence on average as a group, you know, the people implementing these policies, they're not absolute idiots. There's no reason for them to chase prices on an up day. So I don't see central bank gold buying as that thing that's going to take gold to 5,000 or 10,000 or wherever it goes before they start lopping zeros off the dollar. I see it rather as a backstop. And I think that's actually really important. And one reason why I'm less fearful talking about a correction after gold put such a hockey stick is this central bank gold buying, because they have been buying the dips pretty much all the way up since 2022. So was gold overbought? Was it due for a correction? Sure. Do I think it's going to go screaming back down to $1,000 an ounce or some crazy number like that? No. I think the central bank gold buying is an absolute game changer in this market. I don't think it goes away anytime soon, if ever. Like, people ask me, well, how much can they buy? And my answer is, well, how much money can they print, right? There's no limit to how much, you know, little colorful pieces of paper they can print and trade for gold. Remember, they don't have to buy in gold. Unlike international debt settlements and things like that, they don't need dollars to buy gold. So I don't see any hard limits to central bank gold buying. Now, why would it continue? This goes back to the first part of your question. I think the audience probably knows this. Everybody knows this. The so-called weaponization of the dollar, which, by the way, was not under Trump, but under Biden back in 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine. Even if that was justified, and even if that was at the time seemed like the nuclear option without literally going nuclear to try to stop Russia, I understand it. But it absolutely was a wake-up call to the whole world. Like, holy cow, the United States could do what? I just don't think that ever comes back. And it's not just BRICS countries. It's not just Russia and China or India. It's European allies wanting their gold back, right? And, you know, you go around making jokes about who gets to be the 51st state. You know, even your closest allies have every reason to be careful here. And maybe, you know, hedge their bets a little bit about leaving their financial, you know, lifeblood, their aorta, in Washington's hands. So I really do think this is durable. I really think it doesn't make downside impossible. Sure, gold could correct more. I mean, it really was a hockey stick. But I'm not worried about a nuclear meltdown scenario for gold because of that central bank buying. I also think the world is still just as scary as ever. I think the wake-up call that people had about gold, and not just central banks, but like institutions, family offices, deep-pocketed money, old money in the world, they got the wake-up call, and they too are starting to say, hey, you know what? we haven't had any gold, you know, for years. Maybe we should hedge our portfolios with a little bit of gold. Rick Rule's famous, you know, the global average is 2%, multi-decade average, and it's only been 0.5% lately. You know, if it goes back, if it reverts to mean, as Rick says, that would be 4 times the investment demand for gold. But my thinking is, okay, it may not revert to mean. That was then, this is now. If it just goes back halfway to what it used to be, to 1%, that doubles the investment demand for gold. So, you know, I was much more concerned about uranium correcting after going screaming up to triple digits than I am about gold now. What's happening now to me just seems like a normal market action in the face of such a hockey stick.
So you mentioned a hockey stick. For those of us who haven't played hockey or aren't as familiar as to which direction the hockey stick goes, is this shaping out to be a V-bottom recovery? Is that what the hockey stick is? Should investors brace for, you know, more downside first? I mean, what are we looking at?
Yeah, no, the hockey stick doesn't tell you what comes next. And a technical analyst might have a different way of elucidating this, but I'm not a technical analyst. And hockey stick just means you wait for a while, you know, the long part of the hockey stick, you know, it's flat. And then at the end, you get this curve up, right? That's a good hockey stick. But it doesn't tell you what happens next. It just tells you that, you know, you wait, and then suddenly, boom. And as a speculator, you know, my job is to try to get in here before the boom, or maybe as the boom starts, right? Because you can't always tell, right? And as the saying in the markets go, being too early is the same as being wrong. So if you bet back here and you are eventually right 10 years later, well, the opportunity cost is significant.
Right.
Right. So, but at the very least, you'd want to outperform inflation during that time. So the hockey stick doesn't tell us what comes next. It's just that at some point that vertical move has to cool off. So, you know, based on the fundamentals, I think we get some measure of correction, some consolidation, and then we go back forwards. My optimistic scenario, my base case scenario is that we probably waffle around 4,000 for a while and then move higher. And we saw the same thing when gold hit 3,000. We saw it for much longer when it hit 2,000 in 2020. We had a lot of waffling and correction, and people thought, oh, that was it. This is 2011 all over again. It's going to be a bear market for years. They were wrong. 3,000, there were people that said that they were wrong. 4,000, there's certainly people saying that now, though I must say there's fewer. It hasn't been like a bear fest coming out of the forest and storming the camp. This is it. It's peaked. I think maybe those bears have been humbled a little bit by, you know, what happened after 2000 and what happened after 3,000. Which is a good thing. You know, if the overall sentiment in the market was profoundly bearish right now, that would at the very least accentuate the correction now. And that that's not happening. As you and I are recording, gold was off like another $100 overnight, and it's almost back up again to where we were before. So there's real dip buying out there. I don't sense panic here, right? I don't sense that was it. Hockey stick means it's time to get out. Everybody's head for the exits. I'm not seeing that writ large. But, you know, will this correction be a V-shape? I don't know. And I wouldn't believe anybody who says that they do. I do think there is a pretty good chance that it's not done. You know, that gold went so high so fast that, you know, if it corrected $500 an ounce, that's, you know, only we're not that far from that right now. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if it actually got into, you know, 10% correction mode and it stayed there for a while, I think that would flush out some weak hands. But that's what consolidation periods are for. I think it would take a bigger breakdown to really put a panic mode in. Like, I'm not a TA, but the TAs are saying that the Fibonacci retracement is at 3790 or something like that. Maybe for people who do follow technicals, breaking below that would trigger them to get out. I just look at sort of like gold's big wiggles, and you can make a trend line, and something like 3,500 looks like interesting support. I would not be shocked. I don't expect it to get that low. I would not be shocked if it did. I would be surprised if it got lower than that. So, I'm not giving you sunshine here, Steve. You know, you're asking, where's that be? And I'm saying we may not be there. You know, on the other hand, or pause, the case may be for a wolf like me. Again, as a fundamentalist, all the reasons that took gold there are still on the table. None of that has changed. So I could just see a tighter band of consolidation here, as we saw over 3,000 and 2,000, and then the next big move upward. I do not know that, though. So the one takeaway here, and I've gotten a lot of, well, not so much this week, but the last couple of weeks, I got a lot of hate for saying this, and that's nobody goes broke taking profits. Like, if you got a big win on your hands, you enjoyed that hockey stick. Like, you were the long-suffering bull that held on through that long-handled hockey stick, and finally you're getting your day in the sun, and you're enjoying that hockey stick. Don't let it slip through your fingers. Like, you know, how much more painful can anything be to be finally right and then not make any money on it, right? So, you know, I'm not here to defend the cause of gold or silver. I'm not here, you know, as a religious person about my favorite metal. I'm here trying to help people make money and keep the money they make. So I'm not making a bear case. I'm not selling. Oh, by the way, bullion, I never sell unless I need to dip into savings, right? Or I have a, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity, but it's meant to accumulate. I'm talking, talking about the stocks, right? I am definitely taking profits on the stocks. And you know, I started right when it rolled over. I have a system called Upside Maximizer, and I got triggered on some of my big wins, and I started taking some profits. And I got to tell you, it's an enormous relief to have that money locked away. I've been criticized for saying safe in the bank. Yes, I understand that fiat currency in the bank is not safe. I get that. I just mean it. It is out of potential harm's way from a big drawdown in the capital markets. So, yeah, I got a lot of hate over the last couple of weeks for saying, don't forget to take profits. But now I'm sure glad I did. And I'm hearing from clients who are sure glad they did.
So what would you say about, we don't know which way is going to go. When the hockey stick is going to curve, you do want to take a profit and enjoy the little hockey stick when you got it. But what would you say to the people who are watching who think that, you know, the dip is an opportunity to redeploy capital? Or would you tell them, you know, take it as a sit and wait moment? Would you, you know, kind of.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Make sure you do a little bit of both.
The shortest answer is I'm not buying back in again yet. I don't, for whatever it's worth, my old wolf whiskers, I don't sense that this is the bottom. This is the dip. That's it. We're done. Okay. There's enough nervousness. I mean, we woke up this morning to another big drawdown, and there is no mere mortal on this planet who can tell us that's the end of it. So I'm not buying. That's one answer. Yeah. The other answer is, okay, if you buy this dip and gold does go down to 3,500 and the stocks, you know, 3,500 is a great level for the actual business of mining the stuff, right? Or a project under development. You know, today an aggressive gold price assumption is 2,500, 2,600. You put $1,000 an ounce above that. So we all know for the business, the correction down to that level, you know, $1,000 drop from gold's recent interim high, and I do think it's an interim high, would be almost immaterial for the actual business, which is, by the way, another reason not to panic. But the stocks would get creamed. There's no question. You know, gold drops $1,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
The stocks are absolutely going to take it on the chin. So if I'm going to buy the dip now and nobody can tell me that bigger opportunity isn't what's next, you know, I'm just not ready to go there myself. So what if I'm wrong? What if it's in and the next big move is up? Mm-hmm. Well, so bear in mind that taking profits, that does not equal sell everything, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Taking profits can literally mean, you know, you invested, you know, X and you're now at 3X. So you take the profits, which would be 2X, and you still have X on the table, right? It can
be cash.
Everything. It could also mean just recover X and leave 2X on the table. So if you're wrong and the market goes down, you've got your money back off the table. You can't lose, right? If you're right, you still have 2x. You can multiply that big win coming forward. I can tell you that in my recent profit taking, I've had some really big wins, and nobody knows what's going to happen next. So I have been not just taking my initial money off the table. I've been paying myself a little bit too, and leaving a bunch of money on the table. Like I give you a specific example. There was a big silver win I had. It was up 3.5x. I put, let's say, about 10,000 in. The position was worth, or trading at, 35,000. Uh-huh. Recovered 20,000, and I left 15,000 on the table. That means I have a guaranteed double. Like if that stock blows up and goes to zero tomorrow, which isn't going to happen, uh-huh. Did. I have a double no matter what happens, right? Fees paid, everything. I have a guaranteed double no matter what.
Yeah.
And if silver goes to the moon next, I still have 1.5 times more money in that stock now than I started with. So I still benefit.
Right.
Yes, I've reduced my upside, but I absolutely sleep better at night knowing that not only can I not lose, I can't make less than a double on this thing. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that I'm looking at. If you're in the audience and all you want to hear is it's going to the moon tomorrow, you're rah, 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 rah. Yay for our team. I'm just not your due diligence guy. If you want a disciplined approach to making money and keeping the money you make, maybe I'm someone you might want to pay attention to.
Lobo, investors make mistakes. What mistakes do you commonly see people making like over and over again? And you just like, no, stop doing this. What would be that one thing that you see over and over?
Well, being overly emotional, getting mad because somebody doesn't say what you want to hear is not a good thing. I mean, for anybody, if all you hear is what's in your echo chamber, you are opening yourself up to being blindsided. And I say that with all friendliness and motherly love here. You don't have to listen to me or agree with me. But if you can't hear anything that you don't agree with, you are asking for trouble. And that applies in any walk of life and in spades and investing. But I think actually, to answer your question, the biggest, most common mistake that I see is that people are insufficiently skeptical. You know, they're like, oh, wow, Lobo, what do you think of this company? They're going to double their production next year. And I say, well, how do you know that? Well, management said so. Like, you know, guidance is never wrong. especially in the metals and mining space. I mean, it's one thing if you're making shoes and you, uh-huh. You know, you have this projection and, you know, people aren't going to stop buying shoes overnight. They might buy more, they may buy less, but people are always going to need shoes. Whereas you build a mine, hey, you have no control over the underlying commodity price. Like if you sell shoes, you can actually set the price of the shoes. Now, maybe people will buy more or less, but you actually control the price of those shoes. With your metals mining, you don't, right? You take what the smelter gives you. It might be spot plus or minus, blah, blah, blah. There's no fixed price there, right? So you can't control the most fundamental basic input to your financial equation there. And then, you know, you're digging holes in the ground and you're hoping that the stuff in there is consistent enough for you to make on average X, Y, or Z return on investment. Even with the most thorough economic study in the world, it's still just a guess. Like, official mine reserves are called proven and probable, the two categories. I think proven is a misnomer. There is nothing proven in mining. The only time it's proven is when you shovel it through your plant and you see how much metal comes out the other end. That's when it's proven. Until then, all you have is a hypothesis, maybe backed by a lot of math, maybe high confidence. Mine's been doing great for years. Great. But you never know. You might mine into some area where, you know, there was some different kind of fluid came up through a crack in the earth. It changed the chemistry and your recoveries go to hell. Mm-hmm. Until you get there, you just don't know. Mother Nature loves to torture geologists and miners. I mean, sorry, but I kid you not. I remember once where these guys hit this, they hit this deposit. It was a VMS lens, right? And they tagged the end of it, got excited. They tagged another interval. It was thicker. Ooh, we're going in the right direction. It's getting thinner. This is it. You know, we can't miss. Well, the lens was there, but some secondary geological event had remobilized the mineralization inside there and had basically hollowed the thing out. Like the lens was there, but all that was left was this little shell. So they drilled it, it got better. And then they drill and it'd be a narrow thing on the top and a narrow thing on the bottom and bupkis in between. So this is one of my stories of how Mother Nature loves to torture geologists. And so, sorry, I'm going too far down this rabbit hole. The point here was that this entire business, even the biggest and the best in the space, are speculations. They're not investments. And you know, you have to beware of that. And I forgot how we got here, Steve, but
probably talking about hockey sticks, but I do.
Taking profits, right? You know, that's why you know, nobody goes broke taking profits, and it doesn't mean you lack conviction or you're giving up too soon. It just means it's hard enough to make money in this business. It's just the worst thing ever to make money and let it slip through your fingers or claws, as the case may be.
Lobo, you're well aware of fundamentals across the sector. Where do you see the biggest value disconnects right now, and how do you see each segment, the majors, developers, royalties, I mean juniors, I mean, is there anything beaten down enough right now where it's simply irresistible to you?
Yeah, not by company type. Actually, I just did some we just published this and the free edition of the digest. I did some inflation adjusted numbers. And if you look at inflation adjusted gold, right, is now at a real all-time high using the CPI. Yes, I understand that the CPI is no nonsense, but it's the conservative number, right? It's the number that people can't say, oh, you're gilding the lily. So using CPI, gold is real all-time high. And okay, maybe that's not a real all-time high, but you can't say that's a bottom feeding opportunity. Right. If the idea is buy low, sell high, you know, at the time you can't call $4,000 plus gold, you know, the bottom of that end. Right. Silver is far below in real all time highs. It's only just barely hit a nominal all time high. So in terms of, you know, what's attracting my attention on that basis, I like silver better than gold. An interesting thing that came up, though, is I also like energy metals, and I was looking at uranium. And uranium is not cheap on an inflation adjusted basis. It's actually quite dear. So to buy into the uranium thesis, you have to believe that the mining cost has gotten high enough that that justifies a higher price, even adjusted for inflation, which I do think is true. But it was an eye opener for me. I hadn't really looked at it on an inflation adjusted basis before, but it's, you know, it's definitely not a buy low scenario in that context. And so the surprising one, and here's the answer to your question, the surprising one to me, well, there was two mainstay commodities that I'm interested in that are objectively cheap on a real basis. One of them is oil and the other one is copper. Now, oil has good reasons for being cheap. You've got OPEC plus flooding the world with it and talking about flooding the world even more. You know, and maybe, oh, that's just because they want to shut down the shale producers and then they'll tighten the spigots and the prices will go up. Well, maybe, but that's not what's happening now. What's happening now is an oil glut that the IEA and other people are projecting to persist well into next year. So, you know, my friend Rick Rule likes to say he likes to buy hate. Oil is hated. Therefore, he's interested in oil. I get it. I don't disagree. But I prefer to see evidence that the falling knife has actually hit the floor before I try to catch it. And I just don't see that yet. Now, Rick, he's patient enough. He'll be right, you know, eventually. But I'm not trying to time the market bottom here. I'm just saying I see no evidence that it's even near or in. And I, even if I don't know, I would like to at least feel that it's behind me. And I just don't see that yet. Whereas with copper, you know, I was already projecting copper shortfalls, and it's not just me, you know, major engineering firms, you know, basically all the experts agree that there's not enough copper, and going forward, that deficit just widens and widens for a very long time. There might be some substitution in the future, but that's not happening now. What is happening now is a market that was tight now and getting worse going forward. And then on top of that, we had a number of serious accidents in major copper mines this year that have supply even more than already projected. So I'm extremely bullish on copper. I have been accumulating money to buy copper stocks. It's been my number one, like Lobo, one thing I get from people who agree with me on the nobody goes broke taking profit things is, yeah, but what else are we going to put it in?
Mm-hmm.
So my answer is, well, one of the things I'm doing is I'm accumulating money to put into copper stocks. The thing that has held me back, not entirely, but has held me from just going all in or really buying with both claws, is that it's Dr. Copper and it's sensitive to economic developments. I don't think that the global transformation of the economy that Trump is attempting will be painless. And I don't think the shock is done yet. So I think there's potential near-term, like very near-term weakness still ahead for copper. And I'd like to take advantage of that buying opportunity. But whether that happens or not, I expect to be deploying, you know, what for me are large sums of capital, making a big bet on copper. If that buying opportunity materializes, it'll be pretty soon. And if not, I'll just be buying anyway. And okay, I will pay more if I'm wrong about the buying opportunity. I will pay more in a few months than I would pay buying now. But I'm so confident about the trajectory of this trend for years going forward that I won't care. I'll still make a lot of money. It's just very difficult for me to pile into something as economically sensitive as copper is. While as a fundamentalist, I look at the global economy and the US economy and the changes afoot. And it's just, I just can't convince myself that it's time to just, you know, buy, buy, buy.
Is there a sector in the market in our industry where you see extreme pain where you do want to buy, 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 you know, something that's so distressed, full of opportunity?
No, there isn't one yet. In fact, for the first time in my career, I've yanked my shopping list. I have no shopping list at the moment. I'm preparing one for when that changes. I mean, this is terrible. Like for if you're a newsletter writer, you're trying to sell newsletters, I should be saying yes. And I've got this wonderful copper stock that nobody knows about. And pay me now and a secret pick, right? But I can't do that. Like I can't say that and you know, or make one, pick one up, you know, some stock anyway, just to sell newsletters. The truth, I am personally not buying anything right now. So that's the truth. And, you know, the only way I think to have great stock picks more often than not is to not try to manufacture them on a schedule. You can't have the best idea of the year every month of the year, right? And you can't just recommend something because, oh, it's a monthly deadline. You know, sorry, that is what it is right now. When it changes though, I expect to, you know, maybe on average, I'll have one pick per year this year because I'll recommend I will buy, I will put my own money and lead by example and maybe half a dozen stocks all at once. But no, the answer is no, there's nothing right now. And beware of things that are an extreme pain thing, like this oil thing. The fact that it's hated doesn't mean it can't be more hated. All due respect to my friend, Rick. And the same thing people ask about like nickel and lithium and some of these other recent high flyers, molybdenum, you know, any industrial mineral right now is vulnerable to Trump shock. And the other so-called precious metals, platinum, palladium, and so on, I think they were catching a bid because people were interested in precious metals and gold was at all-time high, silver had hit a number of all-time high. Those other two were not. And so I think people said, oh, well, I like precious metals, but I don't want to chase an all-time high. So what else is there? Oh, gee, platinum's still cheaper than gold. You know, that looks good. But that means it's highly vulnerable. It's not because those highly industrial minerals, platinum and palladium, are seeing a shortage. You know, like it's not like South Africa shut down and there's no more mine supply. It's not like that. So I think that makes them highly vulnerable. You know, lithium, you know, it's not rare. Even at low prices, the Chinese are ramping up production amongst others, you know, and the big Western producers have voluntary supply constraint because of the low prices. So if it tries to move up, then that supply is ready to come back online again. It does not look good. I think nickel got ahead of itself due to hype, and it's an industrial mineral. I think it's essential. It doesn't go away. you know, like copper, it's population growth alone is ultimately bullish for nickel. But that doesn't mean it needs to go higher anytime soon. And with the Indonesians, amongst others, just going gangbusters, producing a lot of nickel, there's no shortage there. So yeah, there's hate out there. There's pain out there. But the honest answer to your question is, I'm not buying anything right now. And I realize I just lost a bunch of sales saying that, but hopefully people will appreciate my honesty in the future and not trying to, you know, snowball them now into something that just doesn't exist.
You're not here to sell journals.
Well, ultimately I am, you know, I do have a newsletter. I have to sell something someday, but I'm hoping that people would rather buy something they can rely on for fair and honest guidance as opposed to, you know, something that hypes them into the latest flavor of the day.
I've been in sales for years. I can't stand the people who will say whatever they need to say to get the sale without regard for the other person's money and the crap you're selling that you don't believe in yourself. So I really appreciate that. I did have a question. You mentioned the word Trump shock. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's not an accident. And it's not just me being hyperbolic. And by the way, it's not even necessarily anti-Trump. I mean it very specifically in comparison to Nixon shock back in 1971 when Tricky Dick slammed the gold window on Charles de Gaulle's fingers and took the U.S. off any remaining semblance of a gold standard. That not only reconfigured and changed the United States economy going forward, like there's so many charts. You look at government spending, debts, deficits, all kinds of things. It all seems to start in 1971. That's the hockey stick moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's Nixon. Of Nixon shock. That's the magnitude of Nixon shock when you look at things changing after 1971. I think that what Trump is attempting to do is on that order. He's trying to re-industrialize the United States, not to go back to the 1950s, but a modern version, a 21st century factory, robots included. But he's trying to significantly, like not just tweak around the edges. He is trying to change the nature and basis of the United States economy. And as the world's largest economy, and with, you know, the dollar still being the number one reserve currency, not only, but most widely held reserve currency in the world,
yeah. Right?
This is huge. What changes the United States economy affects the entire global economy. So I do think this is on the order of Nixon shock. And if it's successful, let's say you agree with everything that Trump is doing. You know, we can't have the Chinese making our weapons, right? All these things. We need to have our own rare earths and other, you know, critical minerals. Let's say you agree with all that. Getting there, as I mentioned before, is not painful. You when you stop and retool, that disruption has a cost. And so far, you know, so far they seem to be able to spin the narrative enough that people are going along and ignoring the pain. Maybe they could fake it until they make it, and there is no right. Or maybe the money helicopters stay in the air, and you know, if the government stops being shut down and starts sending out checks again, you know, maybe that mitigates the pain. I don't, but there is a not just non-zero or non-trivial. I think there is a substantial chance that this adjustment will be much more painful before it pays off, assuming it does pay off. And there is the possibility that they don't make it. It doesn't work out. But even if it does work out in a relatively painless way for the United States, I don't think it's painful for the rest of the world. And commodities prices are global. Now, maybe there'll be some differentiation if the U.S. sets subsidies, you know, and guarantees a floor for rare earth prices or something like that. Sure, the U.S. price can stay high when it goes low. But that only helps the U.S. projects. It doesn't help the global commodity market. So all I'm saying here is, you know, if you love Trump and you're mad at me for not praising, you know, our glorious leader enough, or if you hate Trump and you're mad at me for not piling hate and vilifying him enough, let's please not go there. I'm just trying to look at the markets, look at what's happening in the economy, and either camp that you fall in, my message is just that Trump shock is ongoing. It's not done yet. April 2nd was maybe peak shock and awe, but the reality as these changes work through the real world economy, are not done yet, it would be at the very least dangerous to assume everything will be fine and there'll be no pain. That's where I'm going with that. That's why I haven't bought into copper yet. And I'm hoping it brings me, you know, opportunities. I hate to sound cold-blooded or evil speculator taking advantage of everybody else's pain, but you know what? I didn't cause any of this and I don't do anybody any good. By not participating in the market, and if anything, if the speculator steps in when nobody else will, when there's no bid, then we are providing the liquidity the market needs at that moment. And if we benefit our friends and loved ones around us taking that chance, that's not a bad thing either. Sorry, this is actually a pet peeve of mine, Steve. Like, dear speculators out there, you should never, ever feel guilty about making money in the markets. I mean, if you buy low and somebody else suffers from that, selling to you that low point, well, they need the money more than whatever they're selling you at that point. So you are providing liquidity. And if you sell high and you make a bunch of money, you did it honestly. You did it pitting your brains against the market. It was ethical. And you are now in a position to help others less fortunate than you based on voluntary exchange, not coercion, not government programs. I repeat myself. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so never feel ashamed of being a speculator.
Lobo, I don't want to assume that everyone knows what Trump shock is. And I don't want to assume that people, when you drop the bomb and say that this is like Nixon 2.0 or 1971 repeat or as big as that, I like for you to spell out a little bit more what that ripple effect looks like for our market and industry and maybe how investors can position themselves to for what you think is to come.
Well, maybe a simple way to look at this is it's a big chunk of the reversal of the globalization trend. Like Trump himself trying to bring things back to America disrupts these global supply chains. And we're trying to re-nationalize, is not the right word, reinvigorate domestic supply chains. And that has a global consequence, right? And it's not just leading by example, but it's more like if you're another country and you see Trump and you see America doing that and you're like, holy cow, well, we can't trust them to supply us either. We need to do that too. So the ripple effects you're asking about is that other countries will do this too. So we're seeing a big unwinding of the globalization trend that has existed for decades, the so-called peace dividend after the end of the Cold War, which big part of this was built on, you know, the Cold War is over. The world is one. We are one. Yay. Hold hands. Sing kumbaya. So we can trust everybody else to, you know, we can offshore our supply chains. We can offshore our labor. We can offshore our mining. Right. So that going into reverse is huge. Unfortunately, there's no single, here's the play, Steve, you know, buy this one stock and you'll make money from the deglobalization trend. It's a little more complicated than that. It does mean you need to, I've just said that, you know, commodity markets are global, but they can start to fragment. Like if there's a different price for uranium in the United States because of United States government policy, that is relevant to United States uranium plays. And if, you know, well, I was going to say France does the same thing, but, you know, they're kind of getting kicked out of Africa. I'm not sure how that helps them, but other countries can do similarly. Europe certainly has resources in some countries, and they have a list of critical minerals that they are willing to subsidize and push moving forward. So this, on a case-by-case basis, understanding the specific political context of where you're looking to invest, this can be headwinds or tailwinds. So, you know, there's no cookie cutter here, but it becomes an issue that if you get it right, can help, can be a tailwind for your investment. The other thing about Trump shock is, of course, that it is geopolitical too. You know, it is kind of a slap in the face to everybody else. And I think if nothing else, it just means don't expect, you know, that handholding in kumbaya to come back again. And that has investment implications, whether or not there's a new Iron Curtain or anything that extreme, I don't know. Nobody knows. But beware of investing in anything that has you know, a fragile supply chains or depends on international cooperation. After that, it gets messy, Steve. I don't know where to go.
Your imagination wants to protect you from hurting your brain too much, right?
Well, I also don't want to be too negative. Like, there's a lot of scary stuff here, but maybe a positive would be, it's ironic. Nixon took the dollar, which was the Bretton Woods reserve currency of the world. So he basically, by changing U.S. policy, effectively took the entire world off the remnants of the gold standard. Mm-hmm. Trump shock could actually reverse that. Like, everybody else is saying, we got to look out for number one. You know, America's looking mm-hmm. out for number one. We got to do that too. And, you know, nobody trusts each other's colorful little pieces of paper, right? You know, if you can't trust the dollar, what are you going to trust? The yuan, the ruble? Don't forget that. So I can actually see where gold does start to be remonetized. Now, I don't imagine we're going to go around with medieval coin purses clinking in our belts. You know, that's not what I mean. You know, blockchain solves that, right? So,
yeah.
But I can see a world in which you have, it's multipolar, nobody trusts each other, but at least gold is something that you can hold in your hand, right? And you know that it is what it is. You can measure it, you can weigh it, you can do stuff with it. And it's much more convenient than some other possible stand-ins. Oh, and it still works when the electricity goes out or if there's an EMP. Which digital substitutes don't, no offense intended. So I could actually see, not tomorrow, not, you know, the BRICS gold-backed currency is coming tomorrow. You know, a lot of people hype about this, and that's not what I'm trying to say. But I can see that this becomes a push that leads in that direction, because in a world where trust is being eroded and alliance is fragmented, what can you trust? Any politician's word, any treaty, any alliance? How about the 52nd state, eh? Right? So I think of a physical asset that, you know, you can be long and there is no short. There's no counterparty risk. This solves a trust question that I'm not even sure decentralized, you know, nobody runs it, alternatives can compete with.
A friend of mine said, and he claims that Wolf of Wall Street movie took it from him, but he said that God made gold, man made money. Which one do you trust? And so you, if I'm understanding you correctly, I hear you saying that you are not actively buying anything. And so the way you're positioning yourself in Q4 and foreseeably in the next year or a little bit is that you're holding on to cash reserves to back up the truck when you see when it's the right time. Are there any specific catalysts that you're looking might flip the market? And what advice would you give for investors navigating all this?
So for copper, it will be my read on the economy and whether or not we've gotten to the point where, okay, the Trump shock is just not going to upset the apple cart. Like, I have that confidence, or it does. And I'm buying because it's, you know, now things are on sale. Like, either that buying opportunity happens or it doesn't, I just start buying anyway. So it's either I see that drawdown and that triggers my buying, or, you know, some time passes, maybe a couple months, and I just buy anyway. So either of those for copper. For uranium, it's price. The uranium story is so compelling that even though the uranium spot price has wobbled, by the way, the long-term contract price, the real uranium price has not, but the price has wobbled a lot, and that has not really whacked the uranium shares that much. You know, the best of the best have been very gravity resistant. So maybe a bigger scare, you know, maybe some aspect of Trump shock. Now Trump has come out as, you know, very pro-nuclear. And as you and I are recording, actually, uranium stocks are across the board up today because of this, what is it, $80 billion that the administration just announced in investing with Cameco and Westinghouse and Brookfield. To build new nuclear power plants. You know, $80 billion maybe by NVIDIA standards is not that big a deal, but for one commodity like uranium, $80 billion is a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not the only thing going on. So anyway, what I'm saying is the story with uranium is so strong that it's been a while since I've seen a compelling value proposition. So for uranium, it would be price.
Uh-huh.
I'm long already. I'm not feeling any FOMO. Like if uranium goes back to triple digits now, I'll make money. But it might not. It might waffle for a while. I feel no reason to chase it. And I'm hoping for a lower entry points. It might be similar for gold and silver. I think it's likely that we'll see a period of consolidation. That doesn't make me want to chase anything right now. It's possible we'll see a much bigger drawdown. At some point, you know, things get stupid cheap. Then I start backing up the truck, as Doug Casey used to say, right? And that would be based on price. That wouldn't be based on any macro thing or whatever. In the same way, there was no macro thing that said the hockey stick was going to roll over. At some point, I don't pretend to know or be able to call where bottoms are, but things get oversold. In the same way they get overbought, they get oversold. And at some point, they're just cheap enough. It's like, screw it, I'm in, right? So I guess for my four favorite metals, gold, silver, uranium, and copper, for gold, silver, and uranium, it's price, and that leaves copper, which is either this near-term buy catalyst, mm-hmm. or I just buy anyway going forward.
Lobo, if you can tell us a little bit about the independent speculator, what it's all about, how listeners can benefit from it, and as you said, protect themselves and their loved ones, and take opportunity of something that they didn't cause, but you know they got to look out for their own.
Well, the Independent Speculator is my flagship newsletter, as we discussed before. It basically is built around what I'm doing with my own money. If you want to know, well, hey, what's Lobo doing? What's he buying or not, as the case may be, that's the Independent Speculator. We have another service called My Take, which is widely misunderstood. It is not really a newsletter. It's a database. There are about 1,000 resource stocks under coverage in the database. That's obviously more than even I can do. So I have a team that works with me to maintain coverage. And it's a frequently updated database of, you know, I may or may not get everything right, but I can tell you that there is no amount of money a company can pay me for a thumbs up when they deserve a thumbs down or a clause, as the case may be. So that's what that is. It's, you can slice that database, dice it. Let's say you want silver producers, not in Mexico, right? You could get that list and see what my take is on those stocks. And then we have a free newsletter. It's called The Digest or The Speculator's Digest, just The Digest for short. It's free. You do need to sign up on our website and then you can access it on our website. But if you do, I promise you, we will not spam you with a flood of advertisements. I hate that. You get one notification a week if you sign up for that. For the other ones, you know, it depends. Like if you're interested in XYZ company, you could be notified about that. But you have control over that.
Lobo, can you just provide, I'll provide the link below and after the interview, you guys can check it out. But could you just provide the link and your socials where people can find you?
Sure. It's at Due Diligence Guy on X. I'm not sure what it is on LinkedIn off the top of my head. It's probably just my name if you search for my name. And those are the main ones. I'm also on Facebook. That account is old enough that it's probably under Louis James.
Who's Louis James again?
Yeah, who's that Louis? It's funny when I go to Spanish speaking countries and people notice my name. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's a pain. You don't have to explain. But anyway,
well, Lobo, brilliant insight as always. Appreciate the independent part as well as just telling the truth. I get the sense that you really care about primarily doing the right thing. And so thank you for joining, and it's an honor to have you on the show. Hope to have you back because I get a feeling that the real fireworks are still ahead. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Steve Yang with Natural Resource Stocks. And as always, stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Lobo, thanks again.
Thank you.